newspaper pulled up in front of me on the computer. Hey, everybody, I'm Kai Rizdahl. Good thing I know the first line of this thing, huh?
Yeah.
Good thing I know the first line.
I was going to say, this is just the part where you say your name. It's the easy part.
Man.
It's all downhill from here.
Man.
Hey, I'm Molly Wood. Man. Welcome to Make Me Smart, where we are off to a rip-roaring start in the smart department.
Wow. All right, you guys know the drill, right? Big issues in tech, the economy, and culture on this podcast. Joined by all of you because, as we like to say around here, none of us is as smart as all of us.
It makes a really good t-shirt, too.
It does. It's actually cool. Nice and soft, actually. My favorite part of that t-shirt, forget the whole saying thing. It's so soft and nice.
It is a really nice t-shirt. Like, yeah. I need the supplier, I think, because, yeah, it's good. It's a good quality cotton.
Man.
Today is just an extravaganza of smartitude.
Yes.
We are returning to our long-lost tradition of the explain-a-thon, which is... Well, here's what that is. So many of you send us these great questions all the time. Let me back up and signpost this show a little bit. Here's what's
exactly
going to happen.
The same way, except differently.
Yes. See, that's our thing. So many of you send us all these great questions. It's like things we talk about in the show and really any number of other topics. I would like to say that you all have wide and varied sets of interests.
Mm-hmm.
And we can't always get to them because they're either... way out in left field, or we just don't have time. And so every so often, I mean, you know.
That's a nice way to put it.
Wide and varied interests. Every so often, we just try to, like, answer as many questions as we can in one awesome lightning round episode.
Which is today. So we got some voice memos that we're going to play. We've also got some folks on the phone, so you can ask your questions live. If that's you, you know who you are. If not... you know, maybe next time. And then, believe it or not, there are times when Molly and I don't know what we're talking about. And when that happens, you're going to hear this. That is, well, it used to be called Pass to Tony, who was our digital producer. Tony is still our digital producer, but we might just pass to the whole digital squad now since we have one here at Marketplace. And we will get an answer to your question, and we'll put it up later this week at makemesmart.org.
We have leveled up to squad.
I know, right? Squad. I wonder if they know that
squad.
They're called that.
And then just a little note that if you would like to see our utterly stumped faces in the Explain-a-thon, we have been, for those of you who don't know, posting our Make Me Smart episodes on YouTube. So if you want to get a peek into the studio, see what my basement looks like.
I should move this
camera.
What are
we, Marketplace APM?
Ben
on
YouTube? Like flip. Yes, Marketplace APM on YouTube. I was going to grab this very nice Canon EOS C and move it around, but Ben would.
No,
video guy.
No touchy the Canon.
Would not be happy.
No.
Not be happy. So I won't
All
do
right,
that.
Let's get to the questions. But
on,
that would make a good video.
It's a throat clearing right there.
It really would. Annika Deschmain from Germany is a biomedical engineer working in clinical research, so already way smarter than us. Her field of work, obviously, has a lot of regulation around privacy and personal information, and so she left us this question in a voice memo.
So I was wondering, what would it take for our personal information collected through smartphones, websites, and apps, which maybe isn't health-related but is still information that can be traced back to us individually, what would it take for that information to be protected or regulated to a similar extent as required by HIPAA, for example?
Sorry.
Will.
I was just going to say, the Congress of the United States discovering its spine. You know, that's where it is.
Interest.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that would completely upend the advertising landscape that we have today. So it is certainly possible to do that in some way, to say that all personal data must be treated with the same sensitivity as medical records. It's not entirely practical. Like, in some ways, it's not necessary. And I know I'm shocked to hear myself saying this too,
right,
but in some ways it's not necessary to, you know, regulate, to treat all the information that we put out into the world as that sensitive. But it also would mean inventing an entirely new economic underpinning for the web as we know it today. And I'm not sure that will is there.
I have two co-host follow-ups, if I may. May I?
Yes, please.
Okay, number one, do you think we are closer now than we were, say, 2 years ago to a realization that something must be done or the system will collapse because people will begin to get really upset about it?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
I definitely think we are. And I think the companies know it's coming. I think it is an inevitability at this point. It just depends on how well or poorly the legislation will end up being written and by whom.
Yeah. And as we saw Zuckerberg begging for a couple of weeks ago, please help me before I do this anymore, right? right?
Yes,
okay.
Exactly.
All right.
Question number two.
Yes. Question number two, and not to pick on Zuckerberg, but let's pick on Zuckerberg. If Mark Zuckerberg is smart enough as a 20-year-old to invent this thing that becomes Facebook, is he, and by extension, everybody else out there in the new digital economy, are they not all smart enough to figure out a new economic model that will protect privacy and satisfy people and also let them have what they want online?
Yeah, probably.
And let companies make a decent profit, you know.
I mean, groupthink is a powerful thing, I will say. And so it's hard to break out in terms of imagination and come up with a different model. And I think that, you know, I did a panel recently where I learned some things. I got smarter. Mm-hmm. And one of the things that we talked about was, I know,
branding,
it happened.
Dude. Branding.
Uh-huh. Boom. Hashtag that. Dude, hashtag I got smarter is actually really, I'm totally going to start using that. Okay, I'm on target. But one of the things that we talked about was the broad implication, because the easy answer to this is we should just pay. We, the consumer, right, should just subscribe to Facebook. We should pay for Google. We should do this or that. But that would profoundly increase information inequity in this and many other countries.
True.
Like if you, you know, we're already getting to the point where really legitimate news sources are going behind a paywall.
Yeah.
And free news sources are being flooded with lies, propaganda, and misinformation. And we are rapidly moving toward a point where, like, high-quality information is reserved for the rich.
Yeah.
And that's a little scary. And once you start saying that the answer is consumers should just pay for information services, I think you actually get into way more troubled territory than seems obvious at first.
Yeah. All right, I'll buy that. There's a little rabbit hole. There's actually not a little rabbit hole. There's a big giant rabbit hole we can go down on this one, but we've only got...
I think it's internet-sized rabbit hole.
All right, so moving on. Jeremy Ajaro sent us this voice memo with a question about Social Security. Here you go.
I'm a little embarrassed to admit my coworkers and I spent some time comparing our Social Security benefits at retirement age. There are three of us in our early 40s and a couple who are already receiving benefits. But I was taken aback by my relative lower figure of estimated benefits as compared to my similar age coworkers. Can you explain how the Social Security math works?
Yeah, so here's the problem, Jeremy. It's not age that is the determinant, the dispositive factor in Social Security earnings, right? The dispositive factor is, there are two of them. One is quarters worked, literally quarters worked. If you get a Social Security statement, which you should get with reasonable frequency, and you can get by going online from the Social Security Administration, it lays out quarters worked over your lifetime. And you need X amount of quarters worked to satisfy the requirement to get Social Security benefits. So that's limiter number one. Limiter number two is how much money you made during your working career. So going back to Molly's previous point about inequity in consumers, the less money you make, the less money you get. Now, I don't know how much money you make relative to your similarly aged coworkers, but perhaps if your projected earnings are lower, maybe you're not making as much as they are. I don't know. But I do encourage you to go to the Social Security Administration website and get on there and get a statement. And it will actually give you, it will say, if you retire at 65, if you retire at 67 and a half, if you go to 70, you will get X dollars per month. All of this with a giant caveat, and I'm being a little bit flippant, not really, that Social Security is still around when you retire in, I don't know, 30 years. You know.
I was kind of afraid you were going to go there, yeah.
Well, I mean, look, will it be? Probably, but is it guaranteed? You know, ain't nothing
not
certain
even
in this
a little
life.
Bit.
Yeah.
Good
so there you go.
Answer, though, by the way, Kai.
Oh.
Good explainer.
Boom.
This following, and now the pressure is on because the next question is for me. Whew, I'm sweating bees over here, guys. You can see it in the video. Karsten Turner from Milford, New Hampshire, sent this voice memo.
Molly, I know you've said over and over that it's better to keep the radicals in the sunshine than to push them into the shadows.
Really?
I see shutting them down on social media as particularly effective at the latter. People will speak as long as they feel they have an audience, and as we know, where there's a will, there's a way. But will we always be able to hear and react to their message if they're not on a popular platform? What if this all goes to the dark web?
Hoo boy.
I know. See, now I feel like, Karsten, I feel like you argued against yourself there. Like, on the one hand, you said we should shut them down on social media, which has been the approach so far of Facebook and Google. Like, mm-hmm. they don't, you know, they don't delete. They just minimize.
Shut them down. Yeah.
And a lot of researchers, like, you know, friend of the show, Zeynep Tufekci, like, they really do believe that that sort of minimization effort works. Because it's just not... Because things are there, but they're not as visible, and it's sort of it's walking the fine line of censorship there. But there is the thing about the algorithm. So yep. like on the back end, you might minimize all you want, but the algorithm will continue to serve up this increasingly extreme content because it's so engaging. So it's possible that the platform kind of can't win here. Mm-hmm. To the question about whether it's better to keep them in the sunshine than to push them in the shadows, I mean, that's like an age-old debate, I guess, and I don't have an easy answer, which is, on the one hand, it is important to know what your enemies are up to.
Very Clausewitzian of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, well, you know, right.
I think.
Yeah, maybe. Art of War. Sun Tzu.
Yeah, totally. That. Yeah. Right? So you want to know,
right.
but yeah, is it better to go to the dark web to find out? Maybe, because it's true that people seek the megaphone, and we know that from trolls and mass shooters alike.
Right.
Oof, that got dark in a hurry.
Got dark in a hurry. Holy cow.
Well, yep.
Okay. Shall we?
Sorry.
Shall we?
Yeah.
We shall. Okay.
I'm waiting. Okay.
Nick Palumbo sent us this one about the college admission scandal of like 10 days, 2 weeks ago. Here you go.
Hi, Kai and Molly. Do you think the recent bribery scandal will actually change how college admissions are handled in terms of transparency? Or do you think that it'll blow over in a couple of months and it will just be business as usual?
Let me just chat here briefly as the parent of a kid now deeply embroiled in the college admissions process, and one who went through it 3 years ago and two more behind him in another 3 and 6 years. Oh, my God. So look, this cannot keep going like this. I don't think this scandal is going to do anything to change it in the proximate term. But I really think that at some point in the next half a generation, something's going to happen. Truly, I do.
Yeah.
Because
you mean like everything about the way our college system works is going to have to change? Yes.
Well, everything, you know, so I think two things are going to have to change. Actually, let me be specific. Number one, the price and the cost. And number two, who gets in where?
Hmm.
You know, that's what I think. Who knows?
Okay.
Who knows? Well, sister, I got to tell you.
And I'm hopeful because how much is half a generation? Like 10 years?
It
mine's
will come
6
to you
years
sooner
out.
Than
so.
You think. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
And I think about it all the time. No, it absolutely has to change because it is only reinforcing every single structure that is breaking everything right now.
And it goes to, to close the loop here, it goes back to that thing you talked about in the first answer about inequality among consumers in this economy, and whether it's out of education or information, which are, I guess, related, you know.
They really are. And then the quality of the education that you have to get online and see? Boom. Hey. I love an arc.
There you go.
Next up, Brandon Carter has this question about 5G.
Hey, Kai and Molly. With 5G on the horizon, we're hearing a lot of talk about how it will enable driverless cars and Internet of Things. Most people think this is great, but I'm just over here wondering who pays for all that data. Is my car going to require a data plan? Will my appliances hit my data cap on my home internet? And how will an inability to afford said data further disenfranchise those who can't afford it as the new shiny becomes a new normal?
It's like he was listening to the conversation you and I had right before we hit that tape. How did that work?
Look at
that. Like bending the podcast time-space continuum.
It just made the arc unbelievable. I have answers that are both technological and capitalist. So technologically speaking, we should not see the same kind of data cap concerns that we see now.
Really?
Because 5G, it has such bigger capacity to accommodate more and more and more connections. Like it can be up to 100 times faster and accommodate 1,000 times more devices simultaneously. So in theory, you shouldn't have the same constriction. However, this is a service that people are going to want to pay for and that companies are going to want to sell you. And I specifically asked Verizon's head of networks what it was going to cost and whether my bill was going to go up, since this is a more efficient way to provide information. And weirdly, she didn't want to say. Now, T-Mobile has come out and said, we'll offer 5G at the same price. But let's just be honest, like T-Mobile is promising the moon, the stars and everything to everybody right now because they want that merger to go through. Yes. For sure. And look, this isn't a future question that you're asking, Brandon. Like the digital divide is now.
Yeah.
It's a now question. There are people who, you know, we've been doing stories just recently on Marketplace Tech about people who are like having to go to the library after it closes and mooch off their Wi-Fi to do their homework. So those inequalities are not going to get any better with 5G. I wish they would. But in the short term, it'll be a shiny new thing that companies will charge more for. Absolutely. Oh, God. How am I so Kai today?
Proximity breeds, I don't know, something anyway.
Breeds bummer.
Look, yeah, breeds this ad place. So look, your questions are what this show is all about. Tech, economy, culture on a good day. Send them to us. MakeMeSmartAtMarketplace.org. You can actually send them in a regular email. You can do a voicemail. It's always nicer to hear regular people's voices and enough of me and Molly reading what you say. So that's always better. But send them to us. It is.
Please do. Please do. And I feel like because it's an explain-a-thon, this is like totally appropriate because it's also a donate-a-thon.
You're like all over the on-brand thing today.
Did I mention at the top of the show that I watched WrestleMania last night? So like I saw that on your Twitter.
I didn't have you down for a WrestleMania fan. I don't know why. Oh, I didn't actually. Now that I think about it, I know. As those words come out of my mouth, I'm like, God, yep. Really? Do you know this yeah. woman at all?
Take like yeah. one step yeah. back and be like, yeah, no, you definitely did get stuffed cheese crust Little Caesars and watch WrestleMania last night. That happened.
Wow.
Anyway,
wow.
Marketplace, TMI, yeah. and don't at me about the John Oliver show on how evil wrestling is because I saw it and I know, and it is evil and I feel morally compromised. The end. Please donate to keep Make Me Smart going. Marketplace.org/donate.
Yeah. Because look.
Because we got special stuff
we do have
for you
special
right now.
Stuff. Do you have one up there? Because I'm going to hold mine up to the camera. Do you have one up there?
Hold it up to the camera. Right. I didn't get one. I got a picture in the email.
So we got two things. One is we got a notebook. I'm just going to hope you can do this, right? We'll put it next to my face so that it's actually framed somehow. It's a notebook, Make Me Smart Blue, which I don't know how that got to be our color, but okay. And it's like a diary thing, which I always wanted to be the person who carried around one of these and wrote deep thoughts, but I never was and never will be. And now at the age of,
what?
I have, yeah. I've acknowledged
he writes deep
myself.
Thoughts in his iPad.
I do, and then I tweet them out. and stickers, too. I should totally put one in
stickers!
Here. Where should I put one? I should put one in here. No, that would cover something up. Ooh, anyway, so we get no. Well,
just vandalize
Pablo,
the studio,
no, I can't.
Kai.
Pablo will get mad at me. Anyway, stickers and a blue thing. It can be yours for just $60 or $5 a month. Here's the catch, though. The offer ends Wednesday, which is going to be the day after all y'all hear this. The 10th of whatever this month is, April. $60, $5 a month. Stickers and a blue notebook thing. Which is kind of cool.
You can get, to be clear, you can get the sticker with a donation
in. To give them away? Made in Italy?
In any amount.
Really? Look at that. Ben, can you focus on that? Made in Italy. Wow.
I put my hand up next to my face in case he wants to green screen in.
That's right.
There's not a green screen back there, so I don't know what I think is going to happen here. You can get the sticker, by the way, with a donation in any amount, and I think you should because stickers are everything.
Stickers are cool. Yeah.
Again, that URL is marketplace.org/donate. Okay.
Well,
we're going to take a break. And then we have more of your questions.
With the launch of ChatGPT, Sam Altman and OpenAI reinvigorated our imaginations and fears of a world with artificial intelligence. While the company looked like a stunning success from the outside, a battle was brewing within on what the future of AI should be. Almost a year after launching ChatGPT, that battle erupted into a war when the company fired its charismatic CEO, Sam Altman. From Wondery, Business Wars is a podcast about the biggest corporate rivalries of all time. And in the newest season, host David Brown digs into the philosophical differences within OpenAI that culminated in Sam Altman's shocking firing, the chaos that followed, and what it means for the future and safety of AI in the modern world. Follow Business Wars on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus. And for more deep dive and daily business content, listen on Wondery, the destination for business podcasts. With shows like How I Built This, Business Wars, The Best One Yet, Business Movers, and many more, Wondery means business.
Get one of the most successful broadcasts in television history on your schedule with the 60 Minutes podcast. Hard-hitting investigative reports, news, and culture maker interviews and in-depth profiles are waiting for you in every episode. Listen to 60 Minutes every Sunday wherever you get your podcasts.
We're back.
No, now we're back. We're only back when the music ends. Hang on. There you go. Now we're back. Now we're back.
Good job. Good job,
Kai.
You tried
to like Bogart my we're back thing. Come on, man.
I was asking. I got all confused. Oh, my goodness. I'm a hot mess.
All right. Now we are back. Explain-a-thon part deux. Live callers with more questions for us. First listener on the line, Melissa Korch. Hey, Melissa. How are you?
Hey, Melissa.
Oh, my God. Everybody's hailing at the same time.
We just all started yelling at you.
Oh, my God.
How are you?
I'm great. I'm so excited to be on the show.
Live! Where I'm going to go full phone-a-thon here. Where are you calling from?
Oh, Jesus.
I'm calling from Renton, Washington, just south of Seattle.
Great. And let me get all Peter Sagal on you. What do you do there?
I am a school psychologist. I do evaluations for learning disabilities.
Oh, wow. What age kids?
Oh.
Usually like first grade through high school.
Wow. Oh, so like the whole smash, everybody. So what do you want to know? What can we explain for you?
So I was wondering, in a publicly held company, how many shares of stock does a company have in total? And is it uniform across companies? Does it vary over time? And how is that number decided?
Wow, that's so interesting. All right, I'm doing some very quick Googleage here as you ask this question, because full disclosure, I did not peek at... I'm Googling some numbers because the answers are pretty straightforward, but I don't like to peek at explain-a-thon questions because it takes away the fun. So here's the deal. Number one, a company has however many shares of stock that a company's board of directors wants to have, and it varies widely by company. And I just did two companies. Apple shares outstanding, so Apple, the phone and computer company, at the end of last year, they had 4.773 billion shares of stock outstanding. And that was actually down from a year earlier. So almost 5 billion shares of stock out there. IBM, another computer company, right, as of December 31st, 2018, had 916 million shares. So something about 20% or so of what Apple had outstanding. But it's all up to the company's board of directors and the CEO and the management to decide how much access they need to the capital markets, what they want the share price to be, right? Because the more shares you put out there, the lower the price is going to be. Sometimes companies buy back shares to boost the stock price. It all completely depends. But there is no one answer to this company. All companies have X amount of shares. It is absolutely not uniform. It does vary over time. You heard me say that Apple's shares count was down 7% from a year earlier. That's because Apple has been buying back shares. It thinks there's a good price. It wants to buy them back. It wants its current shareholders to feel more value for their investment in the company. There's a lot of really dynamic things going on.
Is it ultimately all related to price, though?
Sure, of course.
They issue a number based on based on some sort of target price range, right?
Yeah, they want their shares to be worth X dollars amount. And that's why you see buybacks and repurchases and all of those things happening. You also see stock splits sometimes, right? If a company's share price gets too high, like I'm making these numbers up, right? But if Amazon shares hit $1,000 and Jeff Bezos says, whoa, that's too high, that puts it out of reach for a lot of retail investors, and I want a lot of people to be able to buy shares in my company, he can do a stock split, and he can do a 2-for-1 split. So he splits them to, if you have one share of stock at $1,000, he will give you two shares valued at $500. You can do a 3-for-1, 4-for-1, take your pick. Warren Buffett famously has never, ever split the shares of his holding company, Berkshire Hathaway, right? And those shares right now, let me just do a real quick thing. They're like over $100,000. They're way over $100,000. They are $306,486,000 a piece. That is down 0.4% in this morning's trading off $1,200. So Buffett has just held on to those shares, not split them, and they now will cost you. If you want to buy into Warren Buffett's company, and the man's a legendary investor, it will cost you $306,000 or something like twice the median home price in the United States. For one share. So, look, that's a really good question because it's a little bit of a inside the black box secret kind of thing if people aren't really paying attention to this stuff. So that was a good one. I like
that one. That's fascinating, though. Yeah. I like it. And there are more to come. Thank you, Melissa. Speaking
Thank
of stocks,
you.
In
yes,
fact,
what?
Our next caller, Kristen Forseth from Michigan, has another stock-related question.
All right.
Hello.
Kristen, welcome to the pod. I'm going to guess you can hear Molly, right?
Yes, hello.
Yes, I can. Hi, Molly.
Okay, good. So Great. What's up?
So what's up?
What?
Kristen, what?
Did it need to be more formal than that? Come on.
Or more professionally put, what question do you have for us today for our explain-a-thon?
Well, first of all, I love you guys, and I've been listening to you for far too many years.
Oh, my God.
But I have a question. Has the portfolio percentages of stable income, which would be safe, versus stock, which is risky, for a person who is about to retire or has retired changed over the last 10 years given the recession?
So look, let me do this first and issue this very standard disclaimer for non-professional financial advisor types. Consult your own financial professional even after you hear what I'm about to say. But I have some questions back for you. Are you talking about a person who was about to retire at the beginning of the recession, or are you talking about a person who's going to retire now? Also, this person, who I'm going to guess you're asking for a friend here, is what's this person's risk tolerance?
Okay, so this person is going to retire May 2020, and has been a relatively conservative person, and has a little over north of $2 million, and I just put 65% in stable value of all my portfolio. However, I have lots of friends who have retired, and they're like 70% in the stock market, which
Wow. So look, let me do the disclaimer again. Consult your own financial professional. But if you are this close to retirement, right, you're basically at a year, the general rule is the closer you get to retirement, the more stable and safe your assets have to be, because you're about to phase out of your earning years and you're going to start drawing down your principal. And if your principal vanishes because the stock market, the Dow goes from 26 to 16, you would just have a very bad 10 or 15 years, and you don't want to do that.
It's like tapering for a marathon.
It is tapering for a marathon. That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Because look, I mean, I don't know how old you are, but if you're retiring, I'm going to throw a number out there and say you're 65.
Your friend.
Your friend.
Under 65, actually.
Oh, well, good for you. But
I'm
look,
57.
Okay, well, amen, sister, way under 65. Look, you're going to be around for another 30 years, right? And your money and your assets have to last. And I think people who've already retired who are 70% in stocks, and again, consult your own financial professional, there's some risk there. And that's not a conservative portfolio.
Right. So what do you think percentage would be a good idea? Like maybe 20% in stocks and maybe blue chip stocks?
I will not give you any financial advice here. Call somebody.
Nope.
We're not going to do that.
But three different people, you know, triangulate your responses.
And make sure you don't get somebody who gives you, you know, a percentage-based thing, because then they'll just make you make trades and they'll get money off of that, right? Get some straight-up fee-for-service.
Right, right. No, but that's what I've learned. And I actually have a good education. And that's what we learned when we were in school, is it should be 20 to 30% in stocks and should all be blue chip or now index stocks, but no more if you're about to retire or retired. And I'm just shocked at people that are, you know, 60-70% in the stock market, but they seem very good with it.
It's a risky place to be. Risky place to be.
Yeah.
But
okay,
look,
great. Thank you. That makes me feel
enjoy
better.
Your looming retirement. Have a good time.
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Right, congratulations.
I'm going to be doing things I love.
There you go. Perfect. Mm-hmm. Take it easy. Yeah,
thanks
for calling.
Thank you so much.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
How about that? A little financial advice. Not really.
I know. Totally. Guy's like, whoa.
Yeah. And this is the part where I should by the way, and I'm pretty sure I've said this before on this podcast, I have zero control over my money because I'm really not very good at it, and my wife handles all of our finances, and I'm glad for it. Honestly, truly.
I mean, I got Joe. I already told you.
Gotcha. That's right.
Same deal.
I did my taxes, by the way. I'm waiting on the call to tell me I owe
too.
The government $1 zillion.
Oh, I owe the government $1 zillion.
Oh, do you really?
Our follow-up. Yeah, and you know, it's funny because we got some, just as a very quick digression, we got a couple of emails from people who were saying like, hey, I feel like you guys really walked on by the whole high earner blue state situation and the way that that tax bill was sort of specifically designed as a dagger to the heart to certain people such as me.
Mm-hmm.
Me. Yep. I owe three times what I owed last year.
Ooh.
Last year I got money back.
Wow.
And now I owe all of that money. And then double again.
Wow.
So it worked. The tax plan worked.
Now I'm bumming because I'm going to get mine pretty soon.
Yeah, it's going to suck. I'm sorry.
Anyway.
Okay, should we do our next call?
Yes, we should. Last one? Mm-hmm. Last one.
Last one.
All right.
Hello.
Hey, Salim, it's Kai.
Hey,
how are you?
Hey, Salim, it's Molly.
Hi, Kai. Hi, Molly.
How are you?
I am good, thank you. I'm so excited to talk to you guys. I hear you guys on the show all the time.
Well, that's great. Thanks so much for listening.
That's awesome. Yes, thank you. All right, how can we make you smart today, Salim?
Or what's up?
Or what's up, as Kai likes to say.
Yeah, companies are very complex entities today, and I wanted to know, what are the 10 criteria we can use to qualify if a company is an American company? it is more than where the corporate headquarters is located. So as an example, if you look at a car's window sticker, the Maroni sticker, the Camry, which is built in Kentucky, could be argued as more American than a Ford 150. The tech giants, I think when they were small, probably could have been considered as an American company, but today they run global operations and use tax strategies to store their international profits in non-American banks.
So, So I've got two very quick answers to that, right? And it comes from, and I don't know if my iPhone actually has it on the back, but it might. Sorry, just taking off the cover now to check.
Oh,
it
yeah,
says,
yeah.
What does it say?
Made in Cupertino.
Designed by Apple in California, assembled in China. So look, a couple of things out of that. Number one is, where is the company's market, right? And is it a truly global market? Is it a mostly American market? Take your pick. The other one, which goes to that thing on the back of the iPhone, is where does the innovation, the intellectual property, and the brain trust for that company come from? And I don't think you can argue that because Apple manufactures in China that it's not an American company, right? Cars are trickier, especially now in the days of USMCA and NAFTA and all of that jazz, since they're assembled from so many component parts. But, you know, there are component parts from, like, South Korea in an iPhone. So, you know, what are you supposed to do with that?
I'm going to say something really nerdy here, which is that there is increasingly, there's been this whole discussion of something called innovation economics and the idea that we should, in fact, reformulate the way that we calculate GDP to take into account, to put, you know, sort of less pressure on. Because, yes, like my BMW was made in South Carolina. So, like, what does that mean for the company itself? But to look at an economy's production in terms of its innovation and maybe slightly less in terms of its actual physical production, because it is, in fact, starting to feel a little bit archaic to measure made in that way.
Yeah, that's great. I love that. And your mention of BMW reminds me of this. I did a story out of Spartanburg, South Carolina, about 2-3 years ago. We went down there. Spartanburg has the world's biggest, not just America's biggest, but the world's biggest BMW factory. They make all the X models there. And I sat down with a family, two generations of a family, both of which work in this BMW plant, which has revitalized Spartanburg and the surrounding area the uplands of South Carolina. And I asked the patriarch, the dad, I said, so is BMW, are you making American cars or German cars? And he said, oh, we're an American company. We're making American cars. So, you know.
Fascinating. Yeah. So a convoluted answer, but possibly an idea for a future show.
Yeah, no kidding.
Yeah, I definitely love to see more on that show. I talked to Patagonia and they had said that they couldn't make their jackets here in the United States because they didn't have the technology to make those technical jackets. And so I think it goes beyond the design because they design those jackets here in the United States, but the actual manufacturing IP is they're using overseas manufacturing, not because of the cost structure only, but they said that they couldn't get all the other pieces to be done here.
I love Patagonia, but I think that's baloney.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
That's probably baloney.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So then the other complicating factor is what companies tell you versus what is.
Yeah. Anyway, Salim, thanks so much. Really appreciate
good question,
the call. It's a really good question. This whole idea of innovation economics is a good one.
Thank you for your time.
I like it. I will say that is like one of the awesome things about the Explainathon is it never doesn't lead to new episode ideas.
Right.
So it's a little self-serving for us to do these at all. In fact, I'm pretty sure we should do an entire episode on the answer that we're about to hear The Make Me Smart question, of course. What is something you thought you knew that you later found out you were wrong about? And much like all of your wide and varied interests, dear listeners, your answers to this question are also wide and varied. Renee Harrelson from Knoxville, Tennessee, shared her answer after Kai shared his opinions on, wait for it, Brussels sprouts.
They're gross.
Something I thought I knew, but later found out I was wrong about, was that I thought I didn't like Brussels sprouts, much like Kai.
Yeah.
However, I found out that if my husband cooks them in duck fat, I will love them.
Look, you could cook rutabagas or my watch band in duck fat, and I would happily consume it. I'm just saying. Right? Come on, man.
I mean,
look.
God, that was like a perfectly constructed podcast sentence right there. Rutabagas, watch band. The thing about the Brussels sprouts is you got to shave them.
Oh,
you
yeah.
You just gotta, like, you use the little shape, the mantle in, like, and you shave them up, yeah. And then you, you know, butter and stuff. But no, you can't chew on the, nobody should be chewing on the inside of a Brussels sprout.
No.
It's gross.
No.
However, they can be delicious, much like your watch
duck
band.
Fat, yes. What is something you thought you knew but found out you were wrong about? Shoot us a voice memo, makemesmart@marketplace.org, and we will comment on your response, I guess, is the fairest thing to say. We will comment on your response.
And keep those emails coming,
thank
by
you,
the
Renee,
way.
Though, for the
marketplace.org. Yum.
Yeah. All right. What
Make
do we
Me
got?
Smart there is produced by Shara Morris. Our senior producer is Eve Tro. Tony Wagner is our digital producer who didn't get a single job today.
I know.
This week's program. I know. This week's program was, I hope, engineered by Daniel Ramirez. Huh? Can you see him?
I can't see. The camera's in my way.
Don't know.
People.
We're going to go with that then. Our theme music was composed by Ben Tolliday and Daniel Ramirez himself.
Himself.
Whether
the executive
he's in there
director,
or not.
Yes. The executive director of On Demand is Sitar Nieves, who we have since discovered does actually listen to the end. As yet unyelled at, though, am I for saying this. The senior vice president, general manager, and also non-listener to the end of this podcast is one Deborah Clark. And you know how I know she doesn't listen? Because she hasn't yelled at me yet. That's all
not
I'm saying.
Not a peep.
Not a peep. Oh, man.
So Kofi Kingston last night became the first African American WWE champion, like to, you know, winner of the championship. Uh-huh. And even though the wrestling itself is scripted, uh-huh. it still is a phenomenal accomplishment in this, you know, he has to like rise through this whole organization, convince the fans to get on board, like convince the organization to write him in as the champion. And then it was this really long and exhausting wrestling match.
Yeah.
It was amazing. It was so amazing. Like, he cried, and they made, like, a special belt for him, and, like, the commentators got all choked up, and the fans were all on their feet. It was amazing.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, we have to go now.
WrestleMania.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.